land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening, and welcome to Yada Yada Radio, such as we are this evening. Very frustrating on my part. I hope that you can hear. It's a small fortune trying to get a decent internet connectivity here in the Bahamas. Certainly paying for it. But with all of the effort to use the direct connect with Blog Talk Radio, that failed. The Bluetooth headset for the phone failed, and I'm on an AT&T card now roaming here in the Bahamas. So we have no technology working on our behalf this evening. But Kirk and JB, are you guys both there?
We are there, yep. And you're sounding okay.
Yeah, clear for me.
Well, all right. Well, we will we'll continue to try, but this was not the intent of all of this additional technology, I will tell you for sure. We left off last week with just the third statement and Mizmor lyrics to be sung, Psalm 23. And it has an implication that I think is what Christians have been led to believe, Muslims have been led to believe, and that is a bit uncomfortable for those of us in the covenant. It begins, his desire is to remember all of your contributions along with those of your branch, your means of ascent and source of answers, the one accepted and anointed. Pause now and contemplate what this means. Now, the first part of that is difficult for us. I don't think I have had any conversation over the past 20 years with anyone who is part of the covenant who has done anything for the purpose of gaining notoriety or favor or merit with Yahweh. We're not looking for a reward. The benefits of the covenant are overwhelmingly sufficient for all of us.
I mean, that's a good enough reward for me.
That is just fine. I just want to be one of the guys, part of the family, because we're going to be immortal, we're going to be perfected, we're going to be adopted into God's family, enriched, enlightened, empowered. That's more than enough. We'll be taken from three dimensions to seven, more than enough. This idea that God's going to remember our contributions is just something that we never think of. And as I shared in the probably the archive portion, the non-broadcast portion of the program last week, well, I think we're uncomfortable with it. It is what it is, the way it must be. For Yahweh to be a loving father, he has to acknowledge the contribution of his children. He wouldn't be a loving father if he didn't. And all parents remember, recollect, recall, bring to mind everything that our children have done that has value and merit. And if we do it...
You pointed out to him.
How could he do it? Right. So it is natural that he would want to do it. And I guess, you know, we'll be embarrassed, but yet gladdened all at the same time. I mean, I know there are some contributions, and the, I've made that I'm kind of excited about seeing the benefit of. There are some, but it's not the benefit to me. It's really just like each time that a covenant member meets Yahweh, so long as I'm not the last one on the line, I'd like to stand in the back of the room and just watch. I just think it would be touching. But on the other hand, when it comes time to try the likes of Muhammad and Paul and virtually every pope, you know, I'd like to be there hurling accusations at them. Presenting the evidence. A friend of mine shared excerpts of a book that I'll read here before too long, calling the popes and the Jews. And it's the long history of Roman Catholic and papal anti-Semitism. And it becomes apparent when you read how disgusting the Roman Catholic Church has been. And many of these stories are dated all the way into the 19th and 20th century. It's not ancient history.
What is that?
They are so repulsive. These men of the cloth, these holy fathers of Roman Catholicism, that from God's point of view, they have to be held in contempt. They have to not just only be sent to Sheol, but as I've read some of the stories of the things that they perpetrated, the victims need closure. And so some of those passages that we considered several months ago were was deliberately judging and seeing that the goyim who have perpetrated these hellish crimes upon others are held accountable, and those who have been victimized witness this, becomes not just understandable but necessary. So I've gone from being really uncomfortable. Like, for example, we considered passages which talked about how during the millennial Shabbat, there are a lot of goyim that are going to be servants to Yehudim. Mm-hmm. And in my mindset, I'm not a Yehudim, so it doesn't matter for me. But if I were one, I wouldn't want a servant. But when you consider how these Gentiles have treated Yehudim, it wouldn't be fair. It wouldn't be just if the roles were not reversed. And those who pretended to be God's chosen are required to serve God's chosen. So it is his desire to remember all of our contributions, along with, and this is really important, those of our branch, our means of ascent and source of answers. Well, Who is that and why is it stated this way? I suggest that the person that Yahweh calls the branch the most often is Dod.
Dod. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dod is the only one that is a, really a source of answers that could also be considered a branch because of all of his mizmor, of all of his psalms. He provides more answers, really, than anybody else. Like, I don't think there is a even a reasonable second in terms of the profusity of answers that are provided by anyone compared to Dod. So he is the one that provides answers regarding our ascent, and he is unequivocally the branch. And by comparing us, so when God says his desire is to remember all of our contributions, along with those of the branch, that puts us in really good company.
I got in there.
Yeah. I mean, wouldn't you like to be in the same paragraph? Well, here we're in the same sentence as Dod. Mm-hmm. Works for me, man. I love that company. And then to make sure that we understand that it's Dod that he's talking about and that our contributions will be remembered along with his, he is the one that is accepted and anointed, Dashem. And in a moment, we'll get to Dashem and really talk about why it is been translated here, accepted and anointed. And guys, if you've got a different take on it, by all means. But I have Dashem as the one who was prepared and prospered, then became overly satisfied with the primary meaning of accepted and anointed. It's an appeal perfect corporative. It's a first-person expression of volition, which is best attributed to the speaker and thus Dod, with the object, which is the acceptable branch, has chosen to be put into action by the subject, God, with unfolding implications over time. Pause now and contemplate what this means. Now, there isn't any reason for us to contemplate it unless it is not only important, but requires considerable thought to appreciate why it's important. So let's begin. Relationships are reciprocal. Therefore, it's appropriate for Yahweh to contribute on behalf of those who have made a contribution. In this regard, there are three individuals who stand out: Moshe, Dod, and Yosha. One of whom is being designated here by the references to branch, being used as a means to ascend and provide answers, as well as being acceptable and anointed. Of the three, only Dod meets each of these qualifications. Now, 23rd Psalm, just three mizmor from this one, which is the 20th. Dashen, which is the word that is a challenge to translate, is presented in the heart of the beloved 23rd Psalm. You know, Yahweh is my shepherd, is how it begins.
Mm-hmm.
And it reads, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint, you deshen, my head with oil. My cup runs over. Now, is there any way to translate deshen other than anoint when it's talking about Dod's head being having oil applied to his head?
No.
So, since it is defined absolutely unequivocally as anoint in the 23rd Psalm, it would be appropriate to translate it as anoint here. Now, when used in the
form,
especially by Moshe, go ahead.
I said, I don't see any reason why not to. That seems like sound logic.
It's irrefutable that based upon Dod's use of it in the famed 23rd Psalm, where it can only be translated anoint, that anoint is at least a primary and acceptable translation. Now, let's turn to the Torah. When the Shin is used by Moshe, it speaks of prospering. Devarim 31:20, for example. It is also used in Shemot Exodus 27:3 when describing the construction of a receptacle used to collect the ash and fats of the sacrificial lamb once the inedible parts were burned outside of the tabernacle. That definition doesn't fit in this context because the remains are without value, leaving us with anointed, acceptable, and prosperous. Although the recognition that the remains of the Pesach lamb are to be wholly consumed by fire suggests that the only person capable of fulfilling this prophecy would be Dod, as Yosha's body was divinely incinerated in concert with the Torah's instructions. Now, moving on to the next statement. We've long since come to realize that the symbolism of Lev didn't mean heart as it does today. You know, we think of heart and emotions today, but in ancient Yisrael, the liver was the seat of emotions, and the heart was the seat of judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And so over the 3,000 years since this was written, in Dod's mind, he scribed these words to suggest that the heart was the place where observation and experience coalesced with character and intellect to produce the best possible plan of action. One in which the individual was motivated and confident in achieving whatever he set out to do. Today, we simply call it exercising good judgment, so that our actions are reasoned and that whatever we do is right. So here's what Ms. Moore 24 says. But before I read that, guys, did you look up Deshen, and do you have any other alternative renderings of it?
Not alternative.
No, I looked it up. I'm sitting here trying to figure out how the King James Version came up with accept as a translation of it, because that's how they translate it. And I don't see how that is even remotely in that word.
Well, I rendered it both accept and anoint. I think there is...
Well, you anoint what you find acceptable. I get that, but that's listed in the definitions as like the seventh.
Yeah.
So why would they opt for that? I don't get.
Yeah. In fact, if I were to write that translation again, I would probably just have anointed in the bold and have accepted what is prepared and prospered. Way down the line. But I did think that the fact that there is a tertiary definition of Deshen that says overly satisfied, because Dod was.
Yeah, that actually fits the context perfectly.
Yeah, Dod was the one that was accepted by Yahweh, the only one accepted by Yahweh. He was the one anointed by Yahweh. He was the one who was prepared. He was the one who prospered. And then he did become overly satisfied. So, it is kind of interesting how all of its potential meaning sort of coalesced into a picture of Dod.
Well, that's why I love this method of translation. I don't see how anyone could look at this verse and just go, oh, Deshen, well, that means accept, and leave it at that. That just wholly does no justice to the text.
And it does no justice to our intellect, because it's...
Yeah.
Clear that Deshen is anointed in the 23rd Psalm.
Yeah. There's so much more to it than that. It can mean that. There's just so much more to it. And leave all that out is just stupid.
Yeah. Being blank and complete.
Did you look at the letters?
He wants to give to you that which is in accord with your best judgment. And fulfill everything you've advised for others. Well, that is...
That has got to be one of the most damning verses I've ever read.
Yeah. So he wants to give to you that which is in accord with your best judgment. That's to say, God's going to be fair. You know, if you're religious, you're going to get a religious... If you've chosen to be religious, then you're going to be dealt with like the religious, which is if you were active and proselytized, you're going to Sheol with all of those others. And if you were political and you were very active in politics, you know, you're going to Sheol with all of the other scumbags. Now, if you were if your judgment was to become a priest, a pastor, or someone like that, I'm sorry, but the outcome's going to be bad for you. He's going to give you that which is in accord with your best judgment. You know, for most people, that's obliteration because they've got no judgment.
Victim.
Most people have just stopped exercising good judgment. They're so fixated on being politically correct that they can't think. And then the thing that makes it particularly poignant is to go on to say, and then fulfill everything you've advised for others. So it's, boy, if you said that salvation is by way of jihad, you're in trouble. If you said that salvation is by the gospel of grace, then, you know, that's how God's going to judge you. And if you've said, if you've exercised good judgment, think of the five terms and conditions of the covenant, I accept them all. I'm delighted to apply them to my life. I am delighted to answer Yahweh with invitations to attend his Moed Mikre. I am delighted to be Torah observant. Then Yahweh is going to fulfill everything that we have done and what we have subsequently advised for others to do. I'm happy to be judged by our proclamations on behalf of Yahweh.
Agreed.
Yeah. I love that idea. You'll be judged by the standard you set for others. That's
correct.
Okay, that's pretty damning, but pretty powerful.
And if the standard we have set for others is the standard that Yahweh articulate throughout his Torah, then it's good to be judged by that standard.
Yep. If you're judging, you set the standard of Paul's letters, I feel sorry for you.
Yeah. Now, on the positive side, when we want what God wants to give and what he wants achieved, we're always going to get what we desire, even without asking. But there is one way to benefit from this extraordinarily positive position, and that is to be observant, closely examining, carefully considering everything Yahweh revealed to us through Mizmor such as this one, and then exercise good judgment regarding what we've learned. And what we are doing is the best way to be in sync with Yah's will regarding Mizmor 24. Study the words, contemplate what they mean, apply them to our lives, and then share them accurately, completely, consistently, correctly. So this all leads to contemplating exactly what Yahweh seeks to fulfill through us and for us as defined by Kol Eshah, everything we have advised on behalf of others, what we have thought about, accepted, and acted upon, including that which we have proposed while counseling others. It suggests that God is going to give us what we have given to those who have listened to us and relied upon what we have said and offered. It's one of the reasons why it's really dangerous to make suppositions and present one's suppositions as if they were fact. Why it's really important to say, this is my take on this word, and this is how I came up with this understanding of this word, and this is how I think this applies, but you know, you're free to and should to do your own study. And when you don't know for certain, say you don't know for certain. And when you do know for certain, state it. Just be consistent with what Yahweh has said.
Yes, So that's part of the reason I can't just translate. I have to write commentary now. I don't feel comfortable just leaving a translation there without explaining it, because then it's too much of that, taking someone's taking my word for it, and I'm like, I don't want that. I want you to understand how I came to this, and if you could find a flaw in it, point it out to me.
It's not just explaining the translation, like in this particular case, taking Kol Esha and just focusing on everything it can mean. But it's also saying, well, what this suggests is that God wants to give to us what we have offered others. In other words, if our advice was religious, we will be discarded or incarcerated along with the religious. If political, then we will be disappointed by the men who are political and rejected by God. If consistent with the Torah, then by its methods and benefits. It's fair. And so we should all take pause and read, listen to what Yahweh has to say before we form opinions or conclusions, and certainly before we speak. Our best possible option is to have our advice coalesce with Yah's.
Now, so that we're wrong if you agree with God.
That is correct. And I think that is essential in terms of understanding, to have our perspective be as consistent as is possible with the perspective that's presented in his Torah. And our translations should be as consistent as possible with Yahweh's nature. Now, there were four reasons that I was initially led to present Mizmor 20 before commencing our review of Mizmor 6 and 7. The first is that it was written to enlighten us about what to expect from Yahweh during the time of Jacob's troubles. That time is on our immediate horizon. The second is the use of Yeshua, salvation, in context with its root, Yasha, to save and deliver. The third is the gall, to look at and celebrate a conspicuous banner. In other words, a neck. And the fourth is its inclusion of Mashiach, anointed Messiah. In the next two statements, we're going to find all four of these words. Now, Dod is encouraging everyone listening to him to Ranan, shout for joy, Ba Yeshua Ata, in your salvation. It is an expression of the benevolent idea that Dod, like every covenant member, celebrates the addition of each soul to God's family. It's not based upon a nebulous religious notion or even a popular belief, but instead, in the name of our God, Yahweh, and on behalf of those who degal, choose of their own accord to actually observe, closely examining and carefully considering the conspicuous banner which will be raised in recognition of its unfolding consequences. Here then is what Dod wrote. May all of us shout for joy over your salvation in the name of our God and upon our own initiative by closely examining the conspicuous banner, the Gadol, by choosing to look at the beautiful celebratory signal, beholding the awesome sight of the sign, electing to actually observe the raised ensign, recognizing the unfolding implications over time. It is Yahweh's desire to satisfy and fulfill all of your requests and expectations.
Wow.
It gets us back to the realization that to be part of the covenant, salvation is an afterthought.
Mm-hmm.
By comparison to being immortal and perfected and adopted and enriched and empowered and enlightened, being saved is, okay, well, I guess he's got to save me to make all those other things happen, but it's all those other things that are really spectacular. But here God says it's his desire and will to satisfy and fulfill all of our requests and expectations. I've got some pretty spectacular expectations of life in the seventh dimension.
Yeah.
And of really exploring in six dimensions in the existing universe and the universe that he's going to create in our presence. I tell you what, it's the little things too. It's the building a campfire and near a beautiful waterfall and listening to the sound of the wind through the trees as we contemplate life and all that we have learned and experienced and the friendships and the camaraderie that has brought us together and the power and beauty of Yahweh and what he has done for us, for all of us.
Wow.
So in this case, we are shouting for joy over the salvation of others. And maybe what this is talking about is that we who have become part of the covenant prior to the time of Jacob's troubles are going to be shouting for joy over the salvation of Yisrael and Yehuda. As Yisrael and Yehuda come out of the three Babylons and return home to Yah. That would be a reason to shout for joy.
Yeah.
And so if the audience here, if you were to speak to Yisrael and Yehuda, those flock, then he would really be totally accurate to say that we will all be shouting for joy over their salvation. And of course, their salvation cannot be a religious salvation because it is not in the name of a church, not in the name of a faith, not in the name of a religion. It is in the name of our God whose name appears in the next line.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's anyone, if any consequence, particularly speaking to Yahudam and Yisrael, who were speaking of salvation in the name of Yahweh. And if there is someone reaching out to Yisrael and Yahuda speaking in the name of Yahweh, I'd like to know, but I don't think there is.
Well, they're not making a lot of noise, if they are.
No. And again, the other thing that's important here is that not only is the salvation in the name of our God, it's based upon each individual's own initiative to closely examine and carefully consider the conspicuous banner, the God. And this banner is something that Yahweh has spoken about not only in the Mizmor, but through the prophet Yeshaya. Now there it's referred to as a neck, as a conspicuous sign. And the more we've studied about the neck, the more it becomes obvious that many of the words on that sign are composed by Dode, because there is the second coming of Dode, and Dode is calling his sheep home. And so this joyful shout of salvation is not only based on the name of our God, Yahweh, but upon the initiative to closely examine the conspicuous banner. And for those who do, Dode's conclusion is correct. Yahweh's desire is to satisfy and fulfill all of our requests and expectations. So just as the previous statement was frightening, you're going to get what you deserve.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be judged based upon your own judgment. This one is wholly celebratory. It is a joyful expression. speaking of those who are observant, closely examining, carefully considered what he has revealed for our edification, Yahweh is committed to satisfying our requests by fulfilling our expectations. Now here, context is important, because this was written to those who were saved in the name of God, Yahweh, and who chose to look at the conspicuous banner, which will be raised. Now, we recognize that many of the words written on it will have come from Dod. All will have been inspired by Yahweh, either directly through his prophets or born out of thoughtful consideration of what they have written. And we hope, we expect, we think that you could be listening to them now as we consider this Mizmor. Now, the flow of this sentence, I think, is also interesting, in that the fulfillment of our requests and expectations follows the celebration of salvation. This isn't God granting temporal or mundane prayer requests in the here and now, but instead promising that life with him in the hereafter will be extraordinarily fulfilling. It serves as an affirmation, I think, that we've been right all along. Our salvation is far less appealing than the prospect of exploring the universe with the one who created it, with our Heavenly Father enriching, powering, and enlightening us every step of the way. Now imagine, we're not only going to be seven-dimensional beings exploring a six-dimensional universe. Our guide is going to be the one who created it. If that doesn't get your motor running, then perhaps
I don't know what's going to happen.
Go someplace else. If that isn't your trip, your cricket. That's my expectation. I want to go and see Yahweh create a Goldilocks planet just like Earth. And just the right size star, just the proper distance from it, just the right amount of heavy elements, just the right amount of water, just the right amount and blend of atmosphere, just the right size moon for tides, just the right magnetic shield that would protect it, just the right everything. I mean, it must be a million things that all had to be perfectly tuned.
The Goldilocks planet.
Yes. Wouldn't you love to see all the calculations that went into this place that we call Earth?
Mm-hmm.
I would love to. And then
as a nerd, that's one of the things I'm looking forward to the most.
Yeah, and I actually think that's the easy part. The hard part is creating a three-dimensional language to alter life. That's the hard part. Now, speaking of this very moment, simultaneously with the people being saved by observing the words on the banner that the author of this song so beautifully contributed, with it now being unfurled as the beneficiaries celebrate their most hopeful desires and experience them being fulfilled, the beloved Son of God continues. Concurrently now, I realize at this moment that surely Yahweh will deliver his anointed Messiah. He will choose to answer and respond through him from his set-apart spiritual realm in the heavens with the influence of a powerful man who isn't afraid to fight for what is right in saving and delivering. Now that's intense. Concurrently now, Atta, at this time, simultaneously with these events that are being narrated, where there is a global celebration of the salvation of Yahweh's people, the dose says, I realize at this moment that surely Yahweh will deliver his anointed Messiah. Now, I would ask you, was there a celebration of salvation among Yisrael and Yehuda when Yahushua was here?
No.
Not at all. But there's a promised reconciliation of the relationship. It's one of the most reoccurring promises throughout the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. And here, Yahweh was saying that at that moment, he's going to deliver his anointed Messiah. Well, the only anointed individual that Yahweh said, that's the one I want you to anoint him, where he told one, his prophet, Samuel, that I want you to go to this place, and I want you to consider the options until I say, that's the one. And then I want you to anoint him.
Dude.
Only happened once.
Mm-hmm.
All of human history, it happened once. There is one person who can emphatically claim to be Yahweh's anointed Messiah. That we have absolute, irrefutable proof directly from God himself that he is Yahweh's anointed Messiah. The author of this song. That's why he said, I realize at this moment that Yahweh will deliver his anointed Messiah. Now, Yasha is an interesting word. Will deliver. It could be will save. It could be Yahweh is the Savior and will save. It's written in the Hippo Perfect, which means that God will engage the one he has chosen and approved in the process of salvation, such that his Mashiach becomes an extension of himself, acting similarly. I've never seen the Hippo have as much merit as it does in this sentence. You know, the Hippo stem, the subject causes the object to participate such that the object becomes a secondary subject, ever more like the subject. So this is God saying that I am going to cause my anointed Messiah to participate in the process of salvation in a manner that is consistent with my own. That is, he said, you know, that's pretty extraordinary. Now, since Yasha can mean deliver and save, I think it is Yahweh is going to deliver his anointed Messiah, and then he's going to engage him in such a way that he is going to act as Yahweh.
Mm-hmm. He's called an action. It's under his direct, under Yah's desire, so of course.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong there.
Yeah. Now, he will choose to answer and respond through him. From his set apart spiritual realm in the heavens, with the influence of a powerful man who isn't afraid to fight for what's right, being right in saving and delivering. Wow. So, we've got Ana here. He will choose to answer and respond through him. God chooses to work through people. Every person he works through has got their aptitudes, their attitudes, and their flaws. Dode just happened to be the most appealing of all people to Yahweh. And so he says, I'm going to answer and respond through him. And I'm going to do some from my set-apart spiritual realm in the heavens. And that what that means is that, you know, sometimes we get carried away. I get carried away on Yahweh's return and saying, you know, he's returning considerably less diminished than he was previously. He's going to come back as light energy. Even if when he comes back at light energy, all of Yahweh will not fit in any part of this planet, much less the whole planet. Yahweh is bigger than our solar system. Yahweh is bigger than our galaxy. Yahweh is bigger than our universe. As a matter of fact, in the seventh dimension, Yahweh is infinitely bigger than our entire universe. And therefore, all of Yahweh will absolutely never, under any circumstances, exist here on Earth. So the vast preponderance of Yahweh, even with his beautiful and stunning light approaching our planet and existing within the tabernacle on the top of Moriah.
All right.
The vast preponderance of Yahweh will still be in the seventh dimension. Therefore, what God is saying is that during this celebration of the millennial Shabbat, where Dod is king of the earth, that Yahweh is going to answer and respond through him. He is God's representative on earth.
Yeah, isn't that the promise he gave to Moshe? I mean, he said, this is what I'm going to do. Here it is, he's saying it again.
Yes.
Is that Moshe?
But that is extraordinarily profound. I mean, this is so far beyond what anyone has ever done. I'm going to answer and respond through him. From the set-apart spiritual realm in the heavens. And he has chosen, just in case you didn't, you know, we're on the same page, you think, well, maybe this is an anointed Messiah, is Yosha, with the influence of a powerful man who isn't afraid to fight for what is right, Deborah, with the superior strength and might, and especially the will to engage in battle for what that needs to be accomplished, which is from Gabor, a strong and brave, valiant soldier, a victorious fighter capable of vanquishing enemies to protect his people. Well, you know, from God's perspective, there's only one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Only one.
I don't recall seeing Yahusha had a whole lot of fights.
Yeah.
I mean, he did overturn some tables once, but that's about as rough as he ever got.
Yeah. And we really have to keep in mind just how vicious, harsh, deadly Yahusha was going to be upon his return.
Mm-hmm.
God's not going to accommodate his enemies or Israel's enemies. He's going to vanquish them. And the person that Yahweh had the greatest success vanquishing enemies was through Dod. Yahweh could vanquish them all with just, a word. But Yahweh prefers working through his creation. That's why we were created. And so there's the implication here that Dod is being chosen because there's a battle to be waged.
Mm-hmm. Well, Yahweh also means to avenge. I mean, that's in keeping with what part of it. So, of course.
Yeah, so Yahweh will avenge with his anointed Messiah. And Dod was clearly the one who was right. Saving and delivering, rescuing by removing that which is dangerous. So let's ponder the implications of Mashiach. M-A, so it's M, which is the appearance of water. Water is the universal solvent, cleansing. Water is the source from which life emerged. Water is the symbolic of the set-apart spirit. The SH, the Shin, is key. So it's the spirit and the word, the nourishing word. It's actually got Yahweh's hand, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So the hand of God, the word of God, the spirit of God.
Power to lift.
With the harsh, the CH sound at the end, which I believe is a protective enclosure, is it not?
It is indeed.
One that separates the good from the bad. So with the Spirit and the Word and Yahweh's hand, there is separation with the protection of those inside of that God is saving. Pretty good word. Good letters.
Yes.
It is correctly translated, anointed. And appropriately transliterated, Messiah. Messiah designates someone God has specially chosen and prepared, giving him the authority, approval, and permission to lead. Now, to determine whom Yahweh was referring to, it's vital to note that Dod, David, is not only specifically named as Yahweh's Messiah, on more occasions than I can count. He, on Yahweh's instructions, was Messiah 3 times. Yosha, by comparison, was never Messiah, and his name is never associated with the title. Ever. Dod was a Gaborah. And Yosha never fought a battle or lifted a sword. And as we know, Yosha is not named in a single prophecy, and Dod's name appears more prominently than all others combined. We've all heard the rumbling, and we realize that there are those who would prefer to translate Messiah as anointed when addressing Dod, and then transliterate it as Messiah, when Messiah is found in a prophecy pertaining to Yosha. This approach, however, is replete with a number of challenges, the two most important of which is that Messiah, if Messiah, isn't properly transliterated as Messiah when it is presented as a title, then there is no Messiah. Think about that. If Messiah isn't properly transliterated as Messiah when it's presented as a title, then there is no Messiah. There is no other Hebrew word when presented as a title that conveys the concept that would justify that transliteration. None. It's either Messiah or it does not exist. And second, in Daniel 9, Messiah was used as an adjective, modifying messenger, and not as a title, negating the opportunity to transliterate it as such in reference to Yosha. And I say that because the rules are simple. Names are transliterated. Words are translated. Mm-hmm. Titles can receive both. You're right. It's simply a word, an adjective, modifying messenger when it's used in conjunction with Yeshua. That means as a word, it cannot be transliterated. Here,
never once does it appear with the definite article.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we have to be a little bit careful with the definite article because in English, all titles are preceded by the definite article. That's not necessarily the case in Hebrew, but you can still distinguish a word when it is a noun, because a title will have to be a noun versus an adjective. An adjective can never be a title, and a noun is one. But if you're using it with the definite article in English, the Messiah, then it has to be used as a noun and work as a title in the context of the sentence. So let me repeat that one more time.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, this could never be acceptable to someone who's steeped in Christianity, even if you went through all this logical analysis that you've done. We've all done it now because we've all been talking about it for a long time and looked up everything we can. This should be overwhelmingly, they should be overwhelmingly receptive to Yehudim when they read this.
Yeah.
This must
absolutely
be falling over yourself, going, thank you, Yahweh, for putting this out there. I mean,
if you're a Christian, your goose has just been cooked.
Yeah, but they won't. They won't accept it anyway.
Because Mashiach is the only term that can be properly translated Messiah. And Mashiach is only used as a title in conjunction with Dod. When Mashiach is used as something that Yahweh has specifically requested, Anah, if it is Yahweh's response and Yahweh's decision regarding Mashiach, it's Dod.
Mm-hmm.
There is no reference whatsoever to Yosha being Mashiach. Mm-hmm. And the Christian Christ is a transliteration of Christos, which was supposed to be a translation of Mashiach, anointed. But it actually means to apply drugs. But that said, it is inexcusable if, in fact, there were some justification, and there is none,
mm-hmm.
for Yosha to be considered Mashiach by Yahweh. There is no justification for translating it into Greek and then transliterating the Greek word into English. As they say in my favorite parlance, that would be stupid. So to use Christ to pretend that there was a Christ, to call yourself a Christian, you have to be ignorant or irrational. There is absolutely no justification from God in any credible text that says that Yosha was Mashiach. And even if he were Mashiach, without any prophecy or indication from Yahweh that that would be the case, then he is the Mashiach, not the Christ.
There's absolutely no basis.
There's no justification whatsoever for Christ or the name of the religion Christian. None. Based on a term which means to drug, and it bears not a single letter in harmony with the actual title Mashiach. And beyond all of that, it corrupts what is perhaps the most important promise that Yahweh ever made. The most important promise that Yahweh ever made wasn't to fulfill Pesach. That was an important promise. It wasn't to provide the Passover lamb. That was an important promise. It wasn't to come back. Well, that's an important promise. The most important promise that Yahweh ever made is the one that he reaffirms over and over and over and over again. And that is, he's going to honor the covenant that he made with Abraham and to Yitzhak and to Jacob, which is that he is going to reconcile his relation with their descendants. He is going to do that. And he is going to do that in the manner that is consistent with Mashiach, through the shepherding, the kingship, the authority of the most important Yahud who ever lived, and arguably the most important person who ever lived, Dod. So if you are a Yehudim, you are a Jew, you are a Yisraelite, your Mashiach has been here. His name is Dod David, and he is going to return. You ought to read and contemplate every word the man was inspired to convey. As you said, Kirk, this is a death knell to Christianity, and it is a cause for celebration for all Christians and for all Jews. And it should be, when you consider that hell that the Roman Catholic Church has perpetrated on Yahweh's people, a passage like this that destroys their credibility and elevates the importance of those they have abused is of just soaring jubilation, of something that has to be, that should be, that we ought to be celebrating, that God's going to hold in contempt the Christians. And he's going to elevate his people, and he's going to do so with the most important Yahud who ever lived. Dod. He is the Messiah. He is the Son of God.
That is so fair. It truly is so fair.
And the more one understands how horrible Christianity has been, it is literally the putrid well from which all of the modern anti-Jewish blame the Jews conspiracies have emerged. If you want to know the source of the preposterous notions that have been perpetrated by those who claim that the Jews are plotting to kill the Gentiles, the Jews are plotting to take over the world, that Jews are disgusting and conniving and untrustworthy, and that Jews are the ones who killed Jesus. If you want to know the source of all of that,
people who did
study the archives.
Yeah.
You want to study the archives of the Roman Catholic Church. They are the bane of existence. To be credible, as we have said, the rules are simple. And that is that titles must be transliterated, as is the case with names, communicating their pronunciation in the new language. Titles can be explained, and they should, if they convey something of interest. With those, Mashiach is used as a verb, as a noun, and as a title, making him both anointed and the Messiah, with the unnamed prophetic announcement in Daniel, the messenger was simply Mashiach, prepared, authorized, and set apart to convey a message. Now, moving to an even more controversial concept, we have two choices with Yasha. When it is addressing Yahweh's Mashiach, anointed Messiah, Yahweh can be delivering his Messiah or saving his anointed. Now, should you be of the belief that it doesn't matter that Yosha was never actually Mashiach anointed or named as the Messiah, then Yasha can only be rendered delivered in the sense of providing a Savior. in this case, because it makes no sense to suggest that Yasha will save Yosha. But both concepts work with Dode. He realized that Dode, Yasha, would save him as well as those who would one day, de Gaulle, observe his conspicuous banner. And that the conclusion, especially at the conclusion of the time of Jacob's troubles, would Yasha deliver him to save his people, liberating them while providing for their welfare. In fact, that is precisely what this prophecy portends. Therefore, reason dictates that this prophecy is addressing the second coming of Dode. The timing is correct, as is the subject, as well as the action being described. Yahweh has been suggesting this very thing since the first line of the first Mizmor Psalm. Now at this moment, it has become certain. Now, I don't know when I'm going to be able to get to it, but the affirmation that Dode is the single most important person who ever lived. He is the beloved Son of God and the Messiah, God's shepherd, the branch. It goes way beyond what we have even shared thus far. There's a place where Yahweh says that the Dode will be as God.
Mm-hmm.
This is the ultimate good news. You know, they say, I've got some good news and some bad news. Well, what's the good news? That Jews, Israelites, Yehudim, can look to one of their own. Dode David, the one who wrote the greatest songs ever sung, to find their way home. What's the bad news? Those that have abused them, who are deliberately and absolutely responsible for the Holocaust, that there would have been no Holocaust without the Roman Catholic Church. That those who have abused them over these past 2,000 years are going to get what they're due. I don't know if that's bad news. Bad news for them. Now, there was other insights in this prophecy that are worth considering. Particularly in translated, he will choose to answer and respond through him in this statement. For many reasons, the most important of which is that it's the operative verb amidst the Mikra invitations, because God is soliciting our response. But here it literally sings its way into the heart and mind of God himself. Yahweh chose to Masiach, anoint Dode David, and inspire him as his prophet, because he wrote the songs God has chosen to Anah sing. More than anyone prior or since, God became Anah preoccupied with the man through whom he would speak, such as his creation would find the Anah answers needed to respond appropriately. It is through the words Yahweh inspired Dode to write that Yahweh's Masiach fulfills and facilitates our Yasha salvation. More than any other word, of course, that concluding term is not the very end, but near the end of the statement. It was Geborah. It's found in Yeshayah 9. It's what keeps Yeshayah 9 from applying to Yosha. A Geborah is a fighter, one who battles for what is right and is committed to defending his people. You know, God did not allow Doge to build his temple because he said he was a man of war. And so you might say, well, why then is God so fixated on Doge being a fighter and wanting to return with a fighter at this time? I think it is that the Doge fighting to protect his flock was wholly appropriate. I think that Doge probably pushed it too far and began to fight too many battles. You know, fighting against the Philistines that wanted to destroy Israel, got no issue with that. Fighting against any one of Israel's common foes that were abusing God's people, God has no problem with that. I have no problem with that. During the second coming of Doge, when all people of religious and political proclivities have to be eliminated, wiped out for God's people to live in peace, I got no problem with that. God's got no problem with that. But Doge probably pushed it a little far during his first reign as king. And I think that's the distinction here. But there is another distinction that's important to make. God seems to like fighters, not pacifists. Now, what did Yosha say? I didn't come to bring peace, but instead division.
Yep.
In fact, the word for division can mean
sword,
knife. Yeah, knife. God seems to like fighters. You know, you look at one of Yahweh's favorite people, the prophet. Who was just so spectacular, Eliyah, at fighting against the pagan religious leaders. Now, his weapons were words. The weapons don't have to be implements of war. Weapons can be words. Yahweh likes
the most effective weapon.
Yes. When, you know, you look at Yosha and the way he responded to the religious and political types, he cut him down at the knees, but with words. You know, we take no prisoners. We're tenacious when exposing and condemning religious and political and conspiratorial lies. God likes that. You know that whether it's true or not, when John was evaluating the Laodiceans at the last days, and says, you know, you're neither hot nor cold, so I'm just going to spew you out of my mouth like your vomit.
Mm-hmm.
God much prefers people who take a stand. Hey, be committed. Be a fighter. Bow your back. But do so in a way that is yummy and right. And then you can, Yasha, save and deliver Yah's people from harm's way and care for their general welfare. Now, should you be among those who prefer to translate Yamin as right hand, it's Doge who is returning as the hand of God and the king of Israel, as the son whose home will exist next to his father's house. So you could correctly say that Doge's going to be the very hand of God. Now, I understand that some may not agree, and that is your prerogative. These realizations are shocking to former Christians. as they are to Jews who have been tormented by them. So if you're not convinced, you may want to ponder the implications of the prophecy that Yahweh revealed through Yaqib El, God's strength of Ezekiel. How about this from 34:22 through 25? I will save my flock, and they shall no longer choose to be approached as plunder. I will judge between the sheep and the goats. That's 34:22. When Yahweh revives Doe's life and replaces Lurk's, we should rightfully give credit to where credit is due. Doe's savior is Yahweh. And that is why God is speaking in first person when stating his intent to save his flock. And it is Yahweh who chose to enlighten us and to lead us home through this man. And it's him that we should listen and follow. Now, I think that we have, or most of all of us, would have missed the realization that Israel has brought much of the abuse the nation has suffered on itself had we not considered the story of Moab's destruction. As you recall, we considered its implications in the 11th chapter of Volume 2 of Observations for Our Time. Fortunately, Israel's self-destructive mindset is about to change. The following statement is specific and emphatic. Dode will be raised up and established as Yahweh's shepherd and co-worker to care for God's sheep. This is what it says. Then, I will raise up and establish one shepherd over them. And my co-worker, Dode, shall take care of them. He himself shall be with them, guiding, nourishing, and protecting them, and he will be their shepherd. I, Yahweh, will be their God, and my co-worker, Dode, shall be the one lifted up as the leader of leaders. I, Yahweh, have spoken and given my word.
Wow.
Go ahead and argue with that.
You better come prepared. That's, you ain't going to get very far with that.
Yeah, no.
But have you gone, Lord?
I'm going to raise up one shepherd. One shepherd. Yeah. Not two. Not three.
Yes.
Listen, there are, you know, Yosha was called, although Yosha never tended a sheep, Yosha was still called the good shepherd. Moshe did tend sheep, both figuratively and literally.
Mm-hmm.
Dode was a shepherd.
Yeah.
But he says, I'm going to raise up and establish Kum. Kum is establish. One shepherd over them. And my co-worker, Dode, shall take care of the flock. How does that give you any wiggle room here?
You have none. You absolutely have none.
Well, I guess you would if there was another anointed king who was the beloved son of God, also named Dode, who was essential and writing giant swaths of inspired insights.
Yeah, but the fact is
anyone else. It's Dode, the beloved son. He himself shall be with them, guiding, nourishing, and protecting them, and he will be their shepherd. I, Yahweh, will be their God, and my co-worker, Dode, shall be the one lifted up as the leader of leaders in their midst. I, Yahweh, have spoken and given my word. The second coming of Dode. It's not an opinion, it's a fact. The idea that Dode is the single most important individual who ever lived is not an opinion. It is a fact. This idea that Yao is not coming back with Mini-Me, Yosha, but coming back with Dode, who is going to be king of the world, as the one with God's authority, is the one God establishes to act during the millennial Shabbat, isn't some flight of fancy that we may have stumbled upon. It is irrefutable for.
This says, correct me if I'm wrong, this says that he's, at this particular time, this is Jacob's trouble, and he's going to lift him up. And we know from previous studies that that Dode is asleep, and he's going to lift him up later. This cannot be Yosha, because Yosha is awake. if he's still in some type of form, he was, during the Purim, he was lifted up. So he's the first fruit. That cannot be Dode because it'd be no one to lift up. He's already lifted up. I mean, it's just,
correct.
I don't care what angle you look at it, and I've tried every angle I can think of. It can't be anyone but Dode, other than the fact that, you know, Yah himself said it is Dode. That's a clue. But the rest of it is,
yes.
I mean, I don't care how bad.
They really named him.
Yes. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just said he only named him by name.
Yeah, that's
if that ain't enough evidence for you, I don't know what's going to convince you.
Well,
yeah.
I don't know. The Christians have to turn it. They have to make Christo turn into this person.
Oh, what they do?
Just ignore it.
What they do is they say that since we know that Yosha was.
He said Dode, but he's referring to.
Yeah, Dode is just a stand-in for Yosha.
Yeah.
Well, then, if he was, then why did you do you think that Yahweh was incapable of writing or inspiring Dode to say Yosha? Do you think that Yahweh knows the difference between the two names?
I would think so. He created the language.
Yeah. If Yahweh meant to say Yosha, do you think he would have written Yosha instead of Dode?
Yeah.
I'm just asking. I mean, if you're smart enough to communicate, to create the universe, do you think you could communicate the right name?
I think that's very plausible.
That's a safe assumption.
If God says this is going to be done by Dode, then I think we should rely on the fact that this is going to be done by Dode.
Yeah.
And if you want to take any other approach, you're saying that God is either an idiot, you can't trust him, he's a liar. But it's not. There are no good options here other than it's Dode.
So there should be no controversy here at all.
No. Dode is Yahweh's Messiah, the beloved Son of God, and thus the most important person in human history. Everything God says and does happens for a reason. What we're about to read explains the reason the universe exists, why life was conceived, and the purpose for which the Torah was written. Then I will cut to approach them, a reconciling, family-oriented covenant relationship. In addition, I will observe the Shabbat by bringing it into evil lives, as they will be removed from the earth, such that they, which will be the sheep of Israel and Yahudah, even in the wilderness, will feel safe, confident, and secure.
Wow.
Well, we knew from Yirmiyah 31 that Yah was going to reestablish his and renew his covenant with Israel and with Yahudah, and that he's going to do so by way of integrating the Torah into the very fabric of our lives. Therefore, when he returns with Dode as his shepherd, God's saying that this is at a time when I am cutting severing and separating, and therefore reestablishing with stipulations, benefits, and responsibilities for the purpose of being able to approach them a shalom, a reconciling, saving, and satisfying, favorable, healing, beneficial, family-oriented covenant relationship. In addition, God is saying, I'm going to bring an end to, I'm going to celebrate the Shabbat, that the final 1,000 years of the plan of 6 + 1 = 7. I'm going to observe the Shabbat by bringing an end to Ra'ah Che, evil lives, the lives of those engaged in perverse and misfortunate wrongdoing who are troubling and ruinous, malignant and disagreeable, displeasing and distressful, injurious, those who are adversarial, because they're going to be removed from the earth. Such that they, even in the wilderness, and dwell confidently and remain safe and secure. Seems pretty darn clear to me. In fact, obvious and rationally original. Yet old myths die hard. So for those still clinging to the popular, albeit misguided expectations of Christianity, who are dying to see their Lord Jesus Christ in this role, take your position up with God and see if you can get him to renege on his promise to his son and to his shepherd's sheep. Considering all of this,
the English translations want to translate Che as beast. Every English translation, I just looked at like 4 different ones. All of them say the evil beast from the land. How can an animal be evil? Animals are instinctive. They're not good, bad, or anything. They are amoral by definition. There's no such thing as an evil beast outside of humans.
Correct. Because they don't have any nesama. They really
cannot. They're not capable of being evil.
No, they react on the way their DNA is written.
Yeah, evil beast. No, not evil lives, because they don't want it to associate to humans. But the fact is, the beasts are the humans. The religious humans are the beasts.
Yeah, by the way, there is no word for sheep here. There are two Ra'ahs, one with an Ain, one with a Aleph, and the one with an Ain is evil, the one with the Aleph is shepherd. So, you know, I'm sorry here, but there is no reference to sheep. Ra'ah Che is evil lives.
Mm-hmm.
The lives of those who are perverse, misfortunate, malignant, disagreeable. That's what the word means. I think it's prudent, speaking of the words, to use our eyes and minds to go where these words lead. Why not recognize and accept that this is Yahweh's plan, his choice, and our interests and his are best served when he uses his beloved son, his Messiah, his Ra'ah shepherd in this way. Now, that, by the way, is even interesting in and of itself. The leader of leaders is a shepherd. You know, shepherds are very, very different. And Kirk, you've made a big deal out of this in the past. Shepherds are very, very different than authoritarian leaders.
Absolutely.
You know, you don't see a shepherd out there chaining and shackling their sheep. You don't see them beating the crap out of their sheep. You don't see them trying to abuse their sheep so that their sheep bow down and worship them.
No.
They're not trying to oppress their sheep. They're not trying to do anything but care for those sheep, to guide them, to nurture them, to protect them. That's the mindset that God finds most useful in governance. It's the way that Yahweh himself wants to interact with his children, which is why El is ram's head and shepherd's staff, the Hebrew word for God. So that's pretty important. The leader of leaders is a shepherd. The man who through whom he conveyed the Torah was a shepherd. A shepherd leads by walking with, engaging with, working with, nurturing his flock. As God said in that promise, he'll be one with them in their midst. Now, speaking of how Yahweh has chosen to use those, now here's another example. It's found in Mizmor 78, 68 through 72. And we're no longer broadcasting, but we are recording, so we can share this just for a little more info. So he chose, accordingly, the people of Yahudah, along with Mount Zion, which he loves. Boy, I guess if you're one of those who say, you know, we have nothing against Israel, we just hate Zionists. Mount Zion, which he loves, in addition to Dod, Yahweh prefers Yahudah and loves Zion, the Mashiach's people in place. These conclusions are irrefutable. As such, you can kiss the notion of replacement theology goodbye, and along with it, the Christian church and the Vatican in Rome. And he built and simultaneously lifts up his set-apart place in contrast to the material realm which he constructed and established long ago for an enduring future purpose. Everything which is important to God is set apart and separate and distinct from that which is common and ordinary. Distinct from man's ways, society's ways, cultures and civilizations. And nothing is more common among men than religion, government, and militarism, all of which are typically intertwined. That is not to say, however, that there's anything wrong with the physical realm, the earth or universe beyond. Yahweh designed all of this for our benefit and to serve his purpose. Moreover, there are specific places which, in contrast to others, reveal his intent, serving as enduring symbols and metaphors. And these include Noah's Ark, the Ark of the Covenant, Israel, Yehudah, Jerusalem, Moriah, and especially Zion, even the tent of the witness and temple. Now, from the perspective of choosing and loving Yahudah Zion, and of building and lifting up that which is set apart, we find Yahweh once again affirming that he has chosen Dod to shepherd his sheep. According to God, Dod is the good shepherd. He chose therein his associate, Dod. He took him from the paddocks for sheep, from following after nursing ewes. He brought him out for a time and will return him, engaging him to be a shepherd with respect to Jacob, his people, with Israel as his inheritance. Once again, Dod's name, the focus is on Jacob, which is all of Israel. The man who is a shepherd will shepherd his sheep. And Israel becomes his inheritance. The words are abundantly clear. The shepherd Yahweh chose to guide his flock, the descendants of Jacob, was, remains, and will once again be Dod. David, Israel is his inheritance. Yahweh was not, or Yosha was not taken from the sheepfolds. But He did not shepherd sheep and cannot be afforded a distinction in the future which has been offered to another. In this regard, it's important to keep three things in mind. First, in God's view, the mindset of a shepherd is identical. Is ideal training to prepare a man to lead the chosen people. You know, that's why God and Father both have a ram's head and a, you know, elf, which is Aleph Lamehav. Yeah. Anah. Yes. Ab, Father. Ram's head and home. His preferred titles use a graphic depiction of a ram's head, revealing the father and leader among the sheep. Now, second, Dode was first and foremost a shepherd. That is what he was doing for a living by Yahweh to protect his people. By the way, he was doing it in Bethlehem. This makes him God's shepherd. Third, Yahusha was the Lamb of God, and more specifically, the Passover Lamb. In this role, he served to fulfill what Yahweh had promised Abraham. God said that he himself would provide the lamb on behalf of the covenant when they met in year 2000 Yah atop Mount Moriah. Bluntly stated, just as the shepherd is not the lamb, and the lamb is not the shepherd, Yahusha was not called to shepherd Yisrael, and Dode was not asked to serve as the Passover lamb. These two men, Dode and Yahusha, have different and yet mutually dependent roles. One consistent with a Zeruah, where a shepherd is one with his sheep, living in a symbiotic relationship. They benefit from one another, as is the case between our God and ourselves in the covenant. We're not only better together. A shepherd's utility is actually negated without sheep, and the sheep are vulnerable and wander aimlessly without their shepherd. Dode, while the consummate shepherd, was far more than a skillful guide, protector, and caretaker of his flock. He was, in the estimation of many, and I think God's as well, the most brilliant and articulate man who ever lived. No one understood God better than his beloved son. Dode was a man of insight and character whom God presents as the one we should trust. He would write, and so he will actually and continually lead them, nurturing and protecting the flock with integrity because of his astute ability to exercise good judgment. And he will lead them with his capable hand, with insight and understanding. Mizmor, lyrics to be sung, Psalm 78-72. It's clear why he chose him. He's going to lead them, insight and understanding, with his capable hand, because he's a man of integrity. Because of his astute ability to exercise good judgment. You know, I suspect that is the who, the and the when, the where, and the with whom, even the why and how God's plan to engage those to serve his people. Should any of us have had questions pertaining to those return, Israel's restoration or Yahweh's purpose, they have been answered. Dode is returning to shepherd Jacob, God's son and king. Israel will be his inheritance. He was chosen because of his integrity, because he was honest, because he exercised good judgment. He is the perfect individual to guide, nurture, and protect Yah's sheep, leading those willing to respond to the most favorable circumstances and opportunistic situations. Dode is now even projected as the the open hand of Yah. He serves as the means Yahweh has and will deploy to guide and protect, to nourish and inspire his flock, even as the means to teach and thereby influence his people. The primary skill set that Dod brought to God's endeavors, making him the ideal participant and partner in the family enterprise, is intellect and understanding as a result of his tremendous mental aptitude. Dod is known for his love, but should be trusted for his logic.
That might be one of the best lines in your book.
Go ahead.
Sorry? I just said, I think that might be one of the best lines you've ever written right there.
Dod is known for his love, but should be trusted for his logic.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. Dod is known for his love, for his passion, but should be trusted for his logic. That sings to my heart because I am driven by evidence and reason.
Mm-hmm.
But they have always been my guide.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Dod, far more than anyone who ever lived, was motivated and led by evidence and reason.
Mm-hmm.
He was rational. Logical. And what I do think happens is that sometimes evidence and reason will lead us to emotion. I have been moved many, many, many times to emotion by evidence and reason. I think perhaps when evidence and reason lead us to understanding, and when understanding leads us to Yahweh and to his covenant family, an emotional response is wholly appropriate.
Possible to avoid.
Yeah, I think so too. Now, I prior to this translation, had seen the Yod, the hand of Yahweh as the Father of the Covenant reaching down and out to his children, ever ready to lift us up so that we could walk together through his universe. But now I see something more. We have just been shown that Dod is the capable and insightful hand of God. And this wasn't the first nor will be the last time that Yahweh will use this profoundly important metaphor in conjunction with his chosen and beloved Ben Dod, Masiach, Melech, Shemach, Ra'ah, and now Kaf, his beloved son, Messiah, King, Branch, Shepherd, and now Open Hand. And while I'm certain that Kaf was used to convey much more, it is with his hand that Dod wrote these words, these very lyrics, which encourage us to exercise good judgment, leading to understanding. Indeed, evidentially and rationally, it is absurd at this point to ignore any of these declarations from the Word of God. He has revealed that the second coming pertains to Dod, and that Dod is the Son of God, Yahweh's Messiah, his King, God's hand and shepherd. And yet this is so debilitating for Christians, catastrophic for Muslims, and so career-ending for rabbis. It's why we remain on this trail a lot longer. Music to the ears of Yisrael and Yahudah, for whom these lyrics were scored. I'd like to pick up at this point here next week. This is the statement that we're going to read.
Stopping point.
Zechariah, remember Yah, Zechariah 3 is extraordinary. why don't we begin this time next week with this? And I hope that I do not have an equipment malfunction again. I hope we're able to get all of the equipment to work as it was designed. And I apologize for being a bit frustrated when I began the show. You know, I had worked on this all day, trying to get all of the pieces together to work, and I couldn't test it until 15 minutes before showtime, because that's the earliest that Blog Talk Radio will allow you to use this direct call-in. And at that point, their systems were locked in and working, but the headset that enabled it to communicate through my computer, which we had worked on to integrate and to get paired, stopped working.
Didn't work.
Oh, I know that feeling. That's 90% of my job right there.
Yeah, you know that. Yes, technology just sometimes just lets us down. And yet here I sit, you know, among the turquoise blue waters of the Bahamas. Most gloriously beautiful sunset and beaches. Yes, that you'd ever see. Sharing these insights with you. So I must say I'm delighted that there is a cell tower 200 yards from where I sit, and that the cell phone will work beautifully. And we do have internet, and maybe I'll get them to play nicely with each other next week.
Sounds good.
Well,
so from Chubb Key here in the Bahamas, I say good night. Hope to be speaking to you from the Exumas next Shabbat. May God bless you all.
Yes.
And for all those celebrating Teruah this week, enjoy and have a great time.
Me too.
Yes.
Take care.
Yeah. For those of us, we celebrated it a week ago, and it was marvelous. Good night, y'all.
Good night.
God bless.